It's the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 102. I'm joined first by Jason Franchuk of the Daily Herald. We talk about the WCC tournament and specifically BYU's chances in said tournament. We also talk spring football, who the QB might be next year, and an early handicapping of that competitive race, and also discussion of the changes in the offensive coaching staff. Matt then comes on to preview the entirety of the WCC tournament. We talk a little spring football, we talk a little baseball, and then we do a draft of the three movies we most want to see in the year 2013. This is the Rise and Shout Podcast. Get us on iTunes. Get us at VanquishTheFoe.com, where you can also catch coverage of the entirety as well of the WCC tournament. And you can listen to this awesome podcast right now.
Go Cougars!
All right, welcoming back to the podcast from the Daily Herald, Jason Franchuk. Jason, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Two quick times here, so this is exciting to me. I feel like I've climbed up the depth chart here, so this is good news for me.
Hey, people like the last ones, so anytime somebody else can talk and I'm not talking, somehow our ratings go up. I don't know how that works, but...
If only my family enjoyed hearing me talk so much, then I'd probably be in pretty good shape in life. But
yeah.
Your audience seems to be depraved or deprived or whatever the word is, I'll be happy to talk.
Well, don't feel bad, Jason. My wife, she's never listened to... This is episode 102. I don't think she's listened to one of them yet, so... So anyway, we've got lots going on. Let's start with basketball. West Coast Conference tournament coming up this week. I know you'll be there covering it. What's the mood of the team? I know coming into last year, and obviously, you know, things are very different this year. There was a lot of optimism that they could win the whole thing, and that the top three teams, there was not a whole lot dividing them. And this year, there's a very different feeling. Gonzaga is the top team in the country, and St. Mary's has obviously outplayed BYU so far this season, both against each other and just overall. Is this team as optimistic as last year's team, or is this team, you think, a little bit more realistic about their chances for the tournament?
Well, I think they're realistic. You know, it's funny, Adam, because they've played Gonzaga and St. Mary's these most recent times really well, yeah. Especially when you consider especially how good Gonzaga was. BYU had that, of course, down into the last minute. And then you look at the St. Mary's game, and BYU shot 15 percentage points better than them out in the Bay Area and just fell short. So, again, down to the closing minute or two. And that presents two things for BYU. I think there's optimism because they know they can do it. On the other hand, are they going to get those kinds of cracks at those two teams again? And that's really hard to say because I look at it like this too. I guess being a bit cynical, I look at the flip side of this and, hey, St. Mary's, I really thought that weekend BYU went up to St. Mary's that Thursday night. St. Mary's still had some pressure on it. And you've got to remember, go back a couple of years to Matthew Dellavedova's sophomore year, I think it was, and they were left out of the tournament. They got burned and, you know, they lost some late games. I think there's some still residual scars from that. And I think they knew what a pivotal stretch that was, especially since they had lost to Gonzaga at home on Valentine's Day. So I think they still felt some tension there that they needed more. I think now beating BYU, beating Creighton at home 2 days later, I think they're in pretty good shape. So they should be loose going into the tournament, I would think. I mean, this is me speaking from the way outside about the St. Mary's situation. Gonzaga, you look at them, they come into Provo. Everything is set up for them to become the number one team in the country. And I think there's a pressure that you have to acknowledge with that. Those kids wanted that. The program wanted it. The school, which is fiercely, fiercely loyal to the basketball program, not just within the Gonzaga campus, but within that whole Spokane, Washington community. They wanted that really bad. And I think the players played with a little weight, even though obviously they're going to be in the NCAA tournament again. They really wanted that game. So to get Kevin Pangos to shoot 1 of 12, I think it was, from three-point range. That ain't happening again. Pardon my grammar, but that is not going to happen. He's just not going to play that poorly. He's going to be probably not quite as good as he was against BYU in the West Coast Conference Tournament last year, but there's going to be a middle ground there, and I'm not sure BYU can overcome that middle ground because it's looking like Gonzaga will be a number one seed. I imagine they'll get through their semifinal, wait for BYU. And I guess to get back to BYU's situation, I would have never imagined this happening. They're 1-8 against the top two teams now in the West Coast Conference in 2 years. And yeah, you're talking 0-4 against St. Mary's. You're talking 1-4 against Gonzaga. And it's just very hard to imagine BYU being able to beat those two teams back to back on essentially 2 out of 3 nights, because, you know, they take that break, that Sunday break between the Saturday semifinals and the Monday championship. But I think BYU feels like they've got the rotation. My biggest concern if I'm BYU is obviously Matt Carlino. He had 9 turnovers against Loyola Marymount. That's got to be toned down a lot, and that's been the biggest issue we know all season. They haven't been able to close out with some big baskets, as proven against St. Mary's and Gonzaga. And Matt Carlino continues to find himself sitting early in the games and non-effective sometimes, and really holds them back on some possessions even when they're offensively efficient, when they get a chance to shoot the ball. So I think they're realistic. I think, you know, seeing this team react after a couple of those losses, they know what they've let get away this season. I think you're going to see them play pretty tough, but it's just they don't quite have the depth I don't think people thought they would from early in the season, and it's just going to be a long road to haul. They're really looking at the NIT, but I think they'll make BYU fans proud with the way they play Friday and Saturday there down there. Get to Saturday, I should say.
Saturday's, but I mean, that was almost felt like that one was kind of inevitable after having the stretch they had played before to have a little bit of a letdown, but luckily Little Marymount's not good enough to have capitalized. Question on Carlino, I mean, in that Gonzaga game, he didn't play particularly well, and then he just didn't come back in. You know, on Twitter you saw some people speculating, well, it's senior night, so Cusick's going to get the call, but as I watched the flow of the game, Cusick was just doing a better job. I don't know if you got a feel, was that a senior night thing, or was that just, you know, he wasn't getting the job done, so Cusick was playing better?
Well, they've struggled with that line all season as far as Carlino gives them the highest gear, okay? Everybody knows that. But if you can't control the car, so to speak, in that highest gear, you got to slow it down a little bit. And that's what Craig does, is Craig offers some stability. He can hit some outside shots. That being said, he wasn't perfect. I thought his final 5 minutes against Gonzaga basically summed up the season for BYU. Brilliant at times. I mean, he hit that three with a hand in his face, shot clock running down. That was probably the loudest I've heard the Marriott Center since a guy named Jimmer was around. And then he misses a couple, or front end of a free throw situation. Then he buries a three. He got fouled Gonzaga opted to foul, give up the 1-1 situation rather than risk a three-pointer. And the foul was committed. There was a delay, so there was no continuation, but he buries like a 30-foot three-pointer, goes and misses the front end of the 1-1 there. And it's just been that kind of year. And you'll recall he also airballed a three-pointer. He was wide open on the left side of the wing there, right by BYU's bench. There was a little collision that I think delayed him a little bit, because I think it was Stockton and Davies hit the ground, and Cusick really had a wide open three, but I think he kind of delayed wondering, well, was it going to be a foul call? Airballs a three that could have really helped BYU, and like I said, I think that really summed up BYU's up and down status, even though that's not really fair to Craig, because he's been a pretty reliable three-point shooter. But they're just in such a weird position with that guard line. You know, I don't know how much improvement you could expect from that to a sophomore year, but I think you've seen more steady play, not necessarily great play out of Gonzaga's guards, but, you know, Gary Bell Jr. and Kevin Pangos are both sophomores, and look at where that team's gotten to. Now they obviously have the help of Olenek, and Elias Harris has been really solid for them, and they've got an all-around better team. I'm not trying to deny that, but I just don't think that the progress in Matt's decision-making, especially when it comes to playing like we talked about, those top two teams, just has not gotten to where they need to be. And, you know, I go back to, I think it was December, it might have even been the Virginia Tech game, when I remember Dave Rose complimented, yeah, I think it was the Virginia Tech game late December, and Dave Rose complimented Matt Carlino for, hey, really attacking and, you know, really getting the team in a rhythm. And he also had 6 turnovers. And I remember thinking to myself, well, it's going to be an interesting season if a kid is getting praised after a 6-turnover game.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that presents some obstacles. And, you know, it's going to be another interesting offseason with Matt. And then I already am anticipating a battle in fall camp because, you know, they'll get Kyle Collinsworth back. And Kyle's always wanted to play the point guard position. He's taller. But to get back to the end of this season, before Kyle gets back from a mission, I think it's going to be interesting in the tournament. Can they play Matt a lot, you know, and can he be favorable as far as not turning the ball over against, maybe they'll play San Diego that first game. If they get to St. Mary's, Dellavedova and those guys whole could really cause him a lot of nightmares and the way they've swarmed him. And then the other guy I really look at right now, besides Cusick, is they need to get Anson Winder some minutes in there because he presents a long defensive ability there that BYU is really lacking. I think that's been the biggest thing that's probably not been talked about as much is how much zone defense this team has had to play because they have trouble stopping penetration along the perimeter. And this is a tough league to zone in. I mean, you look at what San Francisco did to BYU in the Marriott Center. Now it's hard to get that hot every night. I mean, they were unbelievably sizzling there in the second half shooting 3-pointers, but it still, it shows you give a team in this league wide open shots as often as BYU did, and it's going to be a huge problem. So, yeah, Matt's got to play better. I'll be curious to see how he handles that pressure because, you know, Adam, to go back to this, there's really no pressure on Gonzaga. I mean, sure, they want to be a number one seed and everything, but I'm not sure they'll necessarily, if they get to the final and even lose, I don't know if they'll necessarily get knocked down. And there's really no shame in being a 2 seed in this tournament. The odds aren't a whole lot different for being a 2 seed historically and getting to a Final Four and being a 1 seed. And then you look at St. Mary's again. I think the pressure's a little bit off them. So now, in some weird way, the pressure is squarely on BYU, even though BYU is not expected to get to the tournament. If they can get to the championship game, hey, that's an accomplishment itself if they get past St. Mary's. But I'll be interested to see how Matt handles that, how some of these seniors handle that, because they want to desperately. You can see the reactions. You know, I was out at St. Mary's, and just the heartbroken nature of that team. They really felt like they let one get away, and if they could have won that, of course, they come home and play Gonzaga, but then they see those two teams in the NCAA tournament. Maybe on the outside chance they fare that well down the stretch, hey, it's about how you finish in the regular season. Maybe gives them the NCAA bubble back, you know, back in good graces with that committee. I think they really felt like they could build something. It just hasn't worked out. But I will be curious to see how all those guys together handle a pressure of trying to get to a 7th consecutive NCAA tournament when it's clearly all odds are against them right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's shift gears completely to football, though maybe not totally completely, because Capuzzi certainly played a little football this past week and caused a lot of excitement, which should be fun to see if we do play Gonzaga again. That would be that'll be fun to see how that plays itself out. But let's go to football. I saw your tweet, I think it was this morning, from Ross Oppo, and you're saying, hey, I think if I'm misquoting you, correct me, but, you know, one day, no big deal. Anybody can do one day of practice, and I guess
right.
Oppo didn't agree with you. He doesn't think you could do one of Broncos and
shot me a look like he's been working out all off season. I couldn't hang with him. He's absolutely right. I mean, I tried to tell him I ran Ragnar once. I'm not sure if he knew what that was, but, you know, hey, I can run for a couple days or whatever, but, you know, I'm excited to see this team. I don't want people to misinterpret that. I love the start of football season. I'm excited to see where these guys go. I'm not just going to say, hey, one day of practice. They're all fresh. You can run on adrenaline. These guys all want to prove a lot. They're all competitive young men that want to prove to a bunch of new coaches, especially. I mean, let's face it. I mean, there's a lot of reason to be on your toes and have your ears pinned back at this point. So, you know, I'm not sure necessarily everything we're going to see even out of spring ball, but I was interested to see the tempo. I think what stood out, two things. One is pretty obvious as far as Taysom Hill, seeing him on the field again and looking good. And it sounds like the surgery wasn't as, didn't need to be as, deep as what they anticipate as far as the injuries weren't as severe. That said, I mean, the kid's pretty ripped. It's obvious he can rehab pretty well. And then the other thing I'm curious to see is you hear all the yelling of the offensive coaches, and players are really careful, including Ross Apo, about not criticizing the past regime, whether it's Brandon Domann, or the receivers coach Ben Cahoon, or Derby Tate, all really quality people, all really good ambassadors for BYU. But you see the guys they've got there now, including Robert and I being back, Jason Beck in the fold as the quarterback's coach, and then, of course, Guy Holliday. And I talked to Guy for about 15, 20 minutes, and he doesn't really come from a military background, so to speak, but this is a guy who has a deep baritone, will yell. He's a tough love kind of guy, and I'm curious to see how that works out with BYU's players, especially a guy like Ross Apo, who's been around a while but obviously has room to develop. Even more curious to see how it plays with Cody Hoffman, considering, hey, Cody came back to BYU when he perhaps could have gone off to the NFL. So curious to see how those personalities go. Because I think Guy, especially, not right now, it's spring, you know, guys are a little fresher, but you get into fall camp when it's hot out, I think Guy is going to ruffle some feathers. Now, I saw him screaming at a kid yesterday during one drill, and then at the end of the practice, gave him a big smile, pat on the head and everything, and said, good job. But, you know, I think he's going to toe both sides of the line there, but I think there is going to be an inevitable time there when a kid gets cranky and he gets cranky in fall camp, and a few words will pass, just not out of disrespect, you know what I mean, but just sure. Out of the fact that, hey, you know, there's a lot of tension, guys are competing, and I think he's kind of the one that will push guys to their outside limits, well out of their comfort zone. Maybe that's what this group needs, but we all know, Adam, this is cyclical. I mean, you see coaching staffs all around the country. You get the really mean guy, that doesn't work necessarily. You get the nice guy, that works for a while, then it stops working, then you get the mean guy again. Right. I'm curious to see where a guy kind of fits on that pendulum there right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So the one story that's it's inevitable because the outgoing quarterback has graduated, and his backup's backup, I guess, or originally his backup, James Lark, is also gone. So now it's all about the quarterbacks. Your colleague, Mr. Lloyd, said something, I think it was posted today or maybe last night,
yeah,
about the quarterbacks, and he interviewed, I think, all of them. But, you know, one thing that has stuck out to me is that I had heard from someone else late in the season last year. I said something to one of our guests and said, well, you know, he'll be the quarterback next year. And a couple of our guests, when I said that to them, corrected me and said, don't take that so fast. They'll give Ammon Olsen the shot, and sure, we'll see if the two of them. And then Jared talked about potentially Munns, which quite frankly kind of shocked me because I've never really heard anyone talk about him realistically as the starter. So is this a truly open competition, or is it more of a, well, you know, Hill's coming back and he only played a couple of games, so he's not an incumbent, but it's kind of, you know, if you were handicapping it, it's still his to lose.
Well, here's another funny thing. I mean, we were talking just a second ago about the cyclical nature of coaching, the good coach, the player's coach, so to speak, and then the rough coach and everything, the disciplinarian. I think there's an interesting cycle here, too. A lot of people want Taysom Hill to just be named quarterback out of spring ball. BYU needs this. They need this for their leadership. They need this for this and for this and for this. Well, they did it with Riley Nelson, remember? I mean, they had this guy picked basically from spring ball as the guy, and were BYU fans or insiders in the program, were they thrilled with the results of that? No, of course not. I think they need to have a backup ready. One, because, hey, Taysom Hill, with his skill set, is going to be vulnerable at times. And coming off knee surgery, I think everybody's naive if they think there's not the risk of him possibly getting hurt again. Of course, nobody wishes that upon him, but it doesn't mean you can't prepare for a rainy day there. The other thing to me is, I'm curious to see what Robert and I wants out of his quarterback. I think he really is a fresh slate kind of guy. Now, Taysom's got to be the favorite at this point. I mean, as far as his skill set, his youth, the fact he did get to play a little bit, and he's got a pretty high talent level. I think it's going to take a lot for Ammon Olsen or Jason Munns to compete with that. That being said, you know, I think with Robert, he wants to see what those other guys can do. He recruited Jason Munns, so you have to remember that. I mean, that's a guy he's pretty familiar with over the years, and he falls more into that line, of course, the BYU drop-back passer. So I'll be curious to see how that unfolds. I don't think they will name a guy out of spring. I just don't know if that's Robert and I's style, and, you know, people may complain. I think what BYU needs, what they need to happen is for it to become a little more clear. I think especially for people, the players in the program, I think they need it more clear about, hey, what is this guy's ability level? I don't think they want to go in so uncertain in the summer camp and everything, and then fall, or summer workouts and then fall camp. But I think for Taysom, it was not a good start for him the other day. You know, I have told people, I went in a little cynical thinking, knee surgery, it really hasn't been that long. He threw some nice passes. He made some mistakes, too. I saw one ball that would have been a pick six, but he also had it was about a 65-yard pass down the left sideline, which he looked good, not just with his arm strength, but the way he was able to use his legs and everything. And I thought that was the most impressive thing. But, again, hey, people have to let this play out a little bit. You know, you just have to go back not very long to remember Riley was named. And I'm not trying to disparage Riley. I'm just pointing out the situation that just because you name this person at a certain time of the season doesn't mean you're necessarily heads up or head up on what you've accomplished in the past. I think the biggest thing is going to be how this staff develops. You know, Robert and I had these guys in headsets the other day. He wants to figure out who he wants in the booth, who he wants on the field, how they're going to communicate with each other, what they're seeing, what kind of angles everybody gets, and point of views, because they do have some different point of views. I think the biggest thing is, besides that, is can Robert and I get the streamlined philosophy that's been lacking the past few years? A lot of people are criticizing Riley Nelson or Jake Heaps or the situations there. And true, the quarterback play hasn't lived up to what it needs to be, but by the same token, there's been a lot of disarray within the coaching staff, within the offensive ranks. That's part of the reason why Bronco Mendenhall cleaned house. It wasn't just the way players were performing. It was the way players were getting treated behind the scenes. And there was a huge disparity seen between defensive coaches and about the offensive coaches and how they were handling playing time, how they were handling the day-to-day expectations at practices, things like that. So, you know, as much as people want to put the situation on Taysom or Ammon Olsen or Jason Munns, I think the bigger thing is, again, Robert and I, how does he streamline philosophies, glean ideas from new guys like Jason Beck or Garrett Touje or Guy Holliday, who comes in with a unique background, has coached a lot of really standout players over the years, and he needs to, Robert and I's motive right now is to try and figure out, hey, how do I get these guys all on the same page so that the quarterbacks can, in essence, be on the same page too, because that's, again, a huge part of what's been lacking the past few years, besides passes completed, interceptions thrown, all that kind of stuff. I think now more than ever, people have to take a closer look at what this coaching staff accomplishes and what it's like working together.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jason, that was excellent. You hit some things about Guy Holliday I hadn't heard before yet, and a couple of things on the basketball team coming to the tournament that were news to me, and I feel like I've read everything. So as it was the first time, I'm really glad we had you on. It was very, very enlightening. I think our listeners will like it. And like I said, fewer minutes of me talking, and somehow the downloads go up. So
I am long-winded. I think I'm kind of like, I don't mean this to disparage Bronco, but there's times when I transcribe my tape when it's hard to figure out where to put a comma or a period. I'm sorry I'm like that sometimes, but I do get excited talking about this stuff. It's fun to be part of these kinds of forums. And I think this is a really interesting season for BYU, especially coming off last season, getting a young quarterback in there, having the talent level with a guy like Kyle Van Noy back, Cody Hoffman back. I think especially, as every BYU fan knows, they were pretty fortunate to get Kyle back, I think, at this point. So it sets up to be a really unique year. And I think people have to not just put the pressure on the quarterback, though, but, again, on the coaching staff, especially that offensive staff, because it's those guys, along with the offensive line, that are going to really make that quarterback make or break that season for those guys.
Yeah, and with Vannoy and Hoffman coming back and that pretty awesome schedule, I think it's going to be one way, regardless, it will be a very memorable year, hopefully in the more positive than last year kind of respect.
Well, I'm curious to see how the schedule ends up going, because I know everybody's talking about greatest schedule ever. You go back, look at that 2004 schedule. Now, people weren't necessarily thrilled about that, how that BYU team finished, but that was a loaded schedule when you factor in Utah went to a BCS game. That was the glory years of USC. That was also the really the building point of when Boise State became a household name across the country. That was a loaded, loaded year. So I'll be curious also, to, like you, to follow the schedule on, hey, will it really live up to the billing nationally, especially when you think then there's new coaches like Gary Anderson now at Wisconsin. So lots of interesting stuff. And it's fun to kind of look at the process. It'll be fun at the start of 2014 to kind of look back and see how right or wrong they all were.
Well, yeah. You just don't know. I mean, you have an idea. A new coach coming out of Wisconsin. You have new players of every year, right? The rosters turn over. And I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, first year of independence, we're having Hawaii. And I thought the beginning of the year when we were handicapping that was going to be a tough game. And they were terrible. And they've been terrible for a couple of years now. And I thought, you know, because the year before they had been decent. And I thought, well, they lost a few people, but, you know, they've got some good guys left and they'll at least be, you know, it'll be, you know, one of the top five or six games on the schedule,
right.
And it was not. So this year, the same thing. You look at the schedule and you go, Virginia, you know, or you look at some of the other schools and you go, on the schedule, either, or you're really excited and you just don't know. They could have a bad year, or some school we're looking at going, oh, we'll kill them this year, could put together a really good season.
Sometimes I really hate my job because there's an old saying about, sometimes it's better to keep your mouth shut and be considered an idiot than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. And that's kind of how I feel with my line of work sometimes. I have to open my mouth and give an opinion or say what I feel and everything. And sometimes I am so, so wrong. So I'm hoping I'm a little better off this year. But it's going to be, again, like you say, the teams, every team is unique. Even when you return talent, I've always thought about what Dave Rose said is, you know, you can return basically an entire team from the previous season, and it's still a new dynamic. You know, guys have different senses of ego. Guys have different senses of where they belong on minutes or positions or playing time. And that's how BYU is. Even Kyle Van Noy, the way teams are going to guard him this year is going to be, I think, a lot different in a lot of cases than last year. So even though you get that kid back, you can't just pencil in the same stats. You know that as well as I do. So I think it's going to be a very interesting season. I was surprised at the disappointment level that was achieved in the program last year, going 8-5 and not knowing exactly. I was surprised that it didn't work out at all in some situations. I never thought Riley would be a Heisman candidate. I said that all along, but I thought with the parts they had around him that they would have a better season. So I have to admit, I'm walking on eggshells there trying to gauge Taysom Hill because I just don't know yet. It's so early in the process for any of those guys right now. And then you factor, of course, and we've talked about all these new assistant coaches. I think it's going to take time till we even have a really decent gauge at being able to say something educated without just really spitballing it at this point.
Well, you know, that phrase you quoted before, I always just fill the silence regardless, even if they think I'm a fool. So, you know, heck, I do a podcast for free. So what do I know about giving you advice on that? Well, thanks, Jason, for coming on. We'll definitely have you on again, maybe when we get closer to the season sometime over the summer or after basketball is all done. But good luck covering the tournament and have fun covering spring football.
70 degrees in Vegas. I'm excited to go for a few days. So
nice. Well, I just got covered in 5 inches of snow here in Minnesota, so 70 degrees sounds good.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on, Adam.
So, Matt, spring training is going on right now.
Yes.
Yes, it is going on right now. And the big story of spring training, which everyone has been, you know, kind of up in arms about and crazy about, is who's going to win the World Baseball Classic.
That has dominated all of my spring training conversations.
Now, what I wanted to do with this podcast is actually break down the World Baseball Classic in a three-part series, and each part would be 90 minutes.
Wow, that sounds great.
And us talking about it, but I have a feeling that our listeners are not as interested in the World Baseball Classic as you and I might be. And by the way, 4 years from now, we're going to the championship game.
you and I are going to the championship game,
like
or the United States baseball team will be in the championship game. I just want to make sure we're on the same page.
You and I am proposing right now that we go, like, take our families to some warm place and watch a championship baseball game 4 years from now.
So the warm place being where the game's being played, not just a warm place that we could sit and watch the game on TV. Listen, I'm just saying that these things could be misinterpreted, and I want to make sure I understand.
Yes, I'm saying we would watch wherever the game is actually happening. You've totally thrown me off. Totally thrown me off. I hate your guts. So let's
ruin this entire podcast.
Yeah, this opening is done. It's finished. I'm hanging up. So let's start, Matt, not with with spring training, which we'll talk plenty of baseball in this podcast over the next few months, because when the dark times come between spring football and fall camp, we may rename it the Rise and Shop Baseball Podcast, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah, it'll be great when we can get to the point where I will officially predict the Washington Nationals to win their division.
Mm. I don't know why we have to wait, and why would you pick any other team in that division? I mean, the Braves should be decent, but it's done. Barring injury and crazy stuff, you know, because sometimes that happens. Okay, so Matt, let's talk the West Coast Conference Tournament.
Yes.
Before we talk the tournament as a whole, on VanquishTheFall.com, and by the way, you can get awesome coverage of the West Coast Conference Tournament, including coverage of every single game, and not just BYU games, all the games, at VanquishTheFall.com. So, and that's not VanquishTheFall.com, like I just said. It's just vanquishthefoe.com.
Just one dot.
Just one dot. Not
like every other website on the interwebs.
That's right. Like every other. So, according to, on Vanquish the Foe, Brett had a piece where he references the Greek sports book, as well as giving some odds, as well as teamrankings.com and their likelihoods of people winning teams, not individual people, that would be hard, winning the tournament, has BYU at a 6.2% chance of winning the championship and only a 29% chance of getting past St. Mary's or whomever they meet in the quarterfinals to get to that championship game. So, Matt, would you give BYU, would you take the over or under on a 6.2% chance? Would you do that?
I think 6.2% is high.
I think it's about right.
Of winning it?
Yeah, of winning the whole thing. 6.2 isn't very high. You think that's too high, though.
I'd probably go more like 5, but when you get down to numbers this small, I don't know that it really matters.
I mean, they've got Gonzaga as basically 69% chance of winning it, which is, when you're handicapping tournaments like that, that's absurdly high.
Yeah.
But that being said, Gonzaga and St. Mary's, being the 1 or 2 seed, has a massive advantage in this tournament.
It's absurd.
Which is great, because I think they should do that. I wish all conference tournaments gave their, and most do give them some advantage, but you should get a massive advantage for being one of the top teams, right?
Well, yeah, and I think we even talked about this last year. In this particular conference, there's two clear tiers.
Yes.
Of teams.
Yes.
And if you're the West Coast Conference, you've got to protect that top tier, because that's who you want to get as many of those top two and some years three teams. You want them all to go.
Yes.
So ideally, you want St. Mary's to beat Gonzaga in the finals of the conference tournament, and they're both shoe-ins for the tournament.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree with you. There's no doubt about it, bro.
Unless, of course, BYU wins it, in which case you might squeak three teams in. But I don't know that that happens.
So let's look at the tournament bracket. So you and I both, I actually think the 6.2% is high, too. But we would both take a little bit under, but it's not like a crazy number, 6.2%. I mean, it's not that high to be crazy. So let's go through and pick our bracket. All right?
All right.
You ready?
Oh, I am.
First game, Wednesday night. I will be covering this game for Vanquish the Foe. It will then be read by 8 people. No more people than that. But it's on BYU TV, and it's
That's Portland and
Loyola Marymount. Matt, who you got?
I got Loyola Marymount in this game.
Ooh! Why is that?
I'm not. mostly because that one kid from Portland is a real punk, and I just don't want to pick their team. That's really what it comes down to. That really is what it comes down to. And it's, a couple of these early games, a lot of different things could happen. But yes. I don't think – I just see LMU pulling this one out.
Yes, I'm actually also going to go with LMU. I think they have some momentum. I think that close loss to BYU Saturday night gives them a good confidence boost going into the tournament, I think. So,
they've got to win at some point.
Yes, they do. Well, they've won one conference game, right?
Who did they beat?
I think Portland.
There you go. I don't know. I don't know. I meant to look that up beforehand.
I totally made that up. It's true.
Well, let's to the interwebs.
To the interwebs. All right. So while you're looking that up, next game would be, we're predicting, Loyola Marymount against San Francisco Thursday night, also on BYU TV. Who you got in that game, Loyola Marymount or San Francisco?
I have San Francisco.
You have San Francisco. And why is that?
Just real quick, it was not Portland.
Who'd they beat?
They beat Santa Clara.
Ah, they beat Santa Clara. Yeah,
so
yes.
They lost to Portland twice. They lost to Portland 64-68 and then 69-60.
Santa Clara's a decent team.
It was early in the year, and they were coming off of two consecutive losses to BYU and St. Mary's. And it was also at home.
Mm.
When they played Santa Clara away, they lost 79-56.
That's not close.
So, no, that one was not close at all.
Okay. That makes
sense. But they played Portland close twice. I think they've got a shot here. I think they're going to come in hungry. Who wants to finish a season the way that they have? Nobody does. So hopefully you either totally fold or you come in trying to, make an impact in the tournament, and I think that's what they're going to do.
It is pretty amazing when you haven't had a win since January 10th.
That's
got to be. Maybe they want to lose, because do you really want to give that streak? I mean, it's all you got. It's all you got going for you.
Yeah, I guess.
Except for that Santa Clara win and a win against, Texas State. San Antonio, or whoever that was, they beat earlier in the year. Okay, so Matt, we're both calling San Francisco in that first game of the Thursday night, and I don't think that one will be close, quite honestly. I think San Francisco will hand it to them. So the nightcap is who is going to play BYU on Friday night, which is San Diego and Pepperdine. Who you got in San Diego and Pepperdine?
I'm going to take Pepperdine. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm going to take San Diego.
Okay.
Sorry.
Struggling here.
My tabs got all moved around while I was looking up the
Oh my gosh, conference. Your tabs got moved around.
Your tabs got, I'm going to move your tabs around.
That doesn't sound good.
This is a rematch of a game that was just played.
Yes. Just played.
San Diego won the most recent bout, 76-69.
Yes.
They beat them earlier in the year, 62-50. This is, I feel like if you were to break the conference down into three tiers, Pepperdine and San Diego would not be in the same tier.
Hmm.
And I think San Diego is just a little bit better.
I think San Diego is better. I think Pepperdine wins this one. I'm going to call that just because, we overrate you play a team three times. If we took the Miami Heat and they played, pick the best college team in the country, Gonzaga, they're ranked number one right now. I don't think Gonzaga is going to have an advantage going into the third game. You know what I mean? The better team wins the games most of the time. If they play each other enough, the odds just happen to even out if they're an evenly matched team, right? Or they can even out. I think Pepperdine, though, is closer to San Diego than you do, though I think San Diego's a better team. Neutral court, I'm going to give a slight edge to Pepperdine, nail-biter on Thursday night, which I will not be watching because it doesn't start until 10:30 my time, and I'm not staying up till 1 in the morning for San Diego and Pepperdine. Sorry.
I'm crazy.
All right, so Friday night, we have the first game, we both have the same, Santa Clara versus San Francisco. A lot of holiness in that one. See that? There's a Spanish joke.
There we go.
You like that?
There we go. We, probably, we got a lot of Spanish speakers probably listen to the podcast.
We do, yeah. A lot of us fellow Spanish-speaking return missionaries. So Santa Clara and San Francisco, the 4 seed and the, I guess, the 5 seed, right?
Five seed?
San Francisco. So who do you got? Who would you have in Santa Clara, San Francisco?
Santa Clara.
Santa Clara. And close game or Santa Clara but easily?
I think it's Santa Clara easily.
Same here. Same.
Yeah, I think Santa Clara wins this game by 20 points.
I think there are more than 3 tiers in the conference. I think there are, I think Gonzaga's in a tier by themselves. I think St. Mary's is in a tier by themselves. And then I think there's Santa Clara and BYU in a third tier. And then I think San Francisco and San Diego and maybe Pepperdine.
Eh.
You don't think so, but, and no. Then I think, then if you want to say that Pepperdine, Portland and Loyola Marymount in that last group, and maybe Loyola Marymount should be in a one by themselves. But
Loyola Marymount is like the Big East of the West Coast Conference,
or the Metro Conference. You hear that? Might be the football conference name.
Is that what they're going to call it?
I that's a rumor. I don't think they've figured out what they're going to call that.
One of my favorite tweets I saw on all of this is that any conference that has 7 schools break away from it in basketball and take the conference name does not deserve an automatic BCS bid.
Not only do they not deserve a bid, they don't deserve to be a conference. I mean, like, football's king, right, in college sports. It is. That's just how it kind of works. That's where most of the money is. It's, you know, most conference realignment revolves around that. Kudos to the Catholic Seven for taking the name with them and basically hosing those Big East schools. Good for them.
But you know what? You're looking at a bunch of, I know this is a total tangent, but you're looking at some schools.
That's what we do, total tangents.
For whom basketball was the big sport.
Right.
And they were constantly being put on the back burner and playing second fiddle to football, and they were sick of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fantastic. I thought what they did was great, and I thought adding Xavier and Butler, that's a good basketball conference. It's fun basketball conference.
Great basketball conference.
And whoever they add as the 10th team, if they go to 10, which they don't have to. I think people are like, well, who's going to be the 10th? They don't have to go to 10, right?
Right.
I mean, they can stick at 7. Okay, so we're both calling Santa Clara over San Francisco. The nightcap, of course, will be a game that we are interested in and will want to watch, and unfortunately does start at 10:30 my time, 11:30 your time. So that will be, I'm saying Pepperdine and BYU. You're saying San Diego and BYU. Who do you got?
I've got BYU.
As do I. No matter who they play, San Diego or Pepperdine, doesn't matter.
Well, if it's Pepperdine, I definitely have BYU. But San Diego, I think it'll be close. But the real advantage, like we've talked about before, and I think something that plays out in this conference, is fresh legs.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be that Friday night game. They won't have played a game yet. They'll have one extra day off. I think the San Diego Pepperdine game, maybe it won't be really close, but I mean, one of us, we're picking 2 different teams for it, which indicates that it could be, end up being a close game. So I think BYU's just fresh enough to come out on top.
Yep.
A team they've already beat once, right? So.
Yeah, I agree. I think BYU actually wins the game easily. I don't think it's going to be close. And Vegas and the other sources that Brett had in his piece agree with us that BYU will win and probably win easily. So Saturday night will be a fantastic night of basketball on ESPN2. And that's going to be, Gonzaga against most likely, we're both predicting Santa Clara. So let's talk about that one. Does Santa Clara, let's make this easy. Does Santa Clara, do they finish within 15 points of the number one team in the country?
No.
No.
I don't think they do.
Excellent. I don't think they do either. I think Gonzaga comes in like focused, ready, and we just did an interview with Jason Franchuk. He thinks the pressure's off them. I don't know if I entirely agree. I think they will definitely feel some pressure, and maybe it's one of those first 5 or 6 minutes where it's a lot closer than it should be, and then they just destroy them. What do you think?
I don't think it will ever be close.
Yeah.
I when you look at, you pull up Santa Clara's schedule.
Yes.
and you look at their February 20th game against Gonzaga, they got crushed. I think that this Gonzaga team is going to show up to this tournament in extremely focused. I don't think that the ranking thing is going to shake them. They're very well coached. They're a good basketball team. And they, I don't think this game will ever be close.
Well, Gonzaga crushed them, as you said, in Spokane. And earlier in the year, it wasn't exactly, it was close. And I didn't see either of those games, but looking at the box score of that last game, Gonzaga's got to have a massive mental edge right now.
I mean,
after
you almost
annihilating them like that.
It was they doubled their points.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a high school score.
It looks like a score when I play NCAA football on my Xbox.
You get beat that bad? Really?
Except I don't give up that many. I don't give up 42 points.
Okay, so the nightcap will be BYU and St. Mary's for the third time, of course, like most of these meetings. All of these meetings, the third time. The two games have been very close, Matt.
Yeah.
With St. Mary's, including a terrible loss with Dellavedova hitting that stupid shot. And I'm serious, man. I'm serious. Like, everyone's like, he's so clutch. He misses that shot. You know, he makes that one on a 40 times. I've watched that replay so many times because every time BYU plays, they got to freaking re-show it. But he is off balance on one leg, not moving in the right direction, and he hits it. That's like one out of 40, right? One out of 50?
You only have to hit it once.
Whatever. He's clutch. Yeah, clutch except for the games where he loses, right? Yeah, ask how clutch he was against Gonzaga.
Listen, that whole clutch label, the whole clutch label is just a contested definition anyway.
Right.
When you look at somebody that everybody considers the most clutch person to ever play the sport, people will say Michael Jordan. Do you know how many game-winning shots he took and missed?
A lot.
But because he was always taking the shot.
Right.
So, you know, you're not going to hit all of those. That particular shot that Dellavedova hit, I mean, that's an impossible shot.
Well, and I'm not trying to disparage Dellavedova. As we've said on this podcast before, I'm a fan. I like the way he plays.
He's a very good basketball player.
I think he's a very good basketball player. But he didn't make that shot because he's clutch. He made it because he's a good basketball player and he got a good stroke of luck. You know, and the criticism of BYU trying to, they should get in the way or whatever. No. Once he's got the ball and the momentum,
Foul him on that spot on the court. Don't foul him.
You don't deny him the ball, fine. But once he gets it, you let him take the shot. You know, you do not have the game end with him missing that and a whistle and you fouling him on a 60-foot jump shot.
Absolutely.
Or whatever. So, okay, Matt, are you predicting in this third matchup the BYU will finally get the Gales?
I am predicting that in this third matchup that BYU will get the Gales.
Boom! So am I!
So the way I look at it is this, okay? The game in Provo was very, very close.
Yes, it was.
And when BYU played on the road, wasn't as close.
No, it was.
But I saw something. We just watched very recently this BYU team take the team that is now ranked number one in the country down to the wire.
Yes.
I think BYU comes into this tournament with an extra boost of confidence and hopefully having figured some things out. We've talked a lot about the development of this team over the year, and I think the past couple weeks, a couple of things have kind of clicked. I think the team has developed a different type of toughness. And you know, we go back to your thing about you play a team so many times, like you've got to win one of these, right?
Yeah.
I think BYU is good enough to win one out of three against St. Mary's.
So here's the two reasons I think BYU is going to win. Number one, they have figured out how to play without Carlino being a factor. And that was not true a couple weeks ago when they played St. Mary's. He still played 35 minutes in that game and was terrible. 5 turnovers, you add up the rest of his stat sheet, and the number doesn't get to 5. And he was terrible against Loyola Marymount, and he was terrible against Gonzaga. He's back in one of those stretches like he had earlier in the year. I mean, his shooting's off. He's turning the ball over. But against Gonzaga, they kind of just let it go, right?
Mm-hmm.
And let Cusick play. Is Cusick some world beater we've talked about? Of course not. but he is, he's not going to have that kind of self-destruction type of stuff. So I think it will be similar to the last game where Carlino plays more like 20 to 30 minutes instead of 30 to 40. Okay. The other part is, if he can stay out of foul trouble, the Gales have no answer for Davies. Unlike Gonzaga, that has three or four guys that, yeah, he can make moves on them, but he's really got to work. I mean, a little bit on what's his face? Why can't I think of that goofy kid's name?
Kelly Olynyk?
No, on St. Mary's.
I'm just messing with you.
Come on.
You said goofy guy. You said what's the goofy guy's name?
Waldo. Waldo can kind of guard him a little bit, and that's it. They don't have anybody else in the roster who gives him any trouble whatsoever. And because of that, if he can stay out of foul trouble, which of course is a big F with him, I think they can beat St. Mary's. I mean, they've been close both times. Yeah, the second game wasn't like the nail biter like the first one, but I think BYU will come in trying to make a statement. It's not going to get them into the NCAA tournament, a win against St. Mary's, but it definitely leaves them with a very different taste in their mouth if they can pull this off. So we both agree. Cougs and Zags in the championship game on Monday on the big network, ESPN. Matt, what percent chance do you give BYU in that rematch? Which was pretty close in the Marriott Center, but this will not be in the Marriott Center. It will be in some tiny arena in Las Vegas, the Orleans Arena, to be.
Well, if I feel like 6.2% was too high of a likelihood that they would win the tournament, and now we're talking about the chance that they win this game, which would give them the win for the tournament, I have to say that it's smaller than 6.2%.
You don't understand you don't understand probabilities very well, do you? Winning in this game would have to be higher than your 5%. Because the entire probability of whatever.
Oh, right. It boils down. I understand what you're saying. But do you understand what I just said?
I understand what you just said. Basically, you don't think they have much of a chance at all of beating the Zag in this game. I am with you. I think, you know, they had their chance against Gonzaga. Pangos shot terribly and whatever, and the defense was very good, and they had their shot. I don't think Gonzaga is going to play that poorly again on offense. I just don't think they will. And I don't think they're going to play so poorly on defense, which they're a good defensive team, that's going to let BYU score 80 points. You know what I mean? It's just, I unfortunately think, though I probably give them a slightly higher chance than you, it's not a very high chance. If this is within 15 points, I'll be a little surprised. So we have the Zags as winning the whole thing.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully next time we're on a podcast next week, and we will actually be in person discussing this, Matt, and recording this next week, talking about WCC tournament, will be both completely wrong, and the Cougars will have shocked the world, and then on bracket Sunday, everyone's whining about how BYU got in the tournament and knocked out their team.
That'd be pretty sweet, but I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't think so either.
Somewhere around a 6.2% chance.
Yeah, as we said, it's not a very high chance. So, Matt, spring football has started, and we have talked about, I think, every single spring football storyline already. There are quarterbacks, and one of them will be the quarterback next year. There's a schedule, and it looks pretty awesome. And there's a new coaching staff, and I have no idea besides really what that will mean. Do you have anything else you want to add to spring ball?
We're using signs.
We're using signs.
That's pretty cool.
We're using signs.
I'm hoping one of them is a big picture of me.
I think there's a very good chance of that. I think if you, for whatever reason, skip Jason's interview, listeners, go back and listen to the spring football portion, which is the second half of the interview, because he talks about Guy Holliday and a little bit about him as a coach. And he also told me after the podcast that he's got a kind of a story coming out
that may, by the time this podcast is posted, may already be on CougarBlue.com on the Herald site. So check that out. I'm excited, and we will talk a lot more spring football after they've had more practices, and certainly before the spring football game, which is, I believe, scheduled for the 30th, right?
I believe that is Saturday, right.
Of Easter weekend, which is, that's the way to do Easter weekend right there.
Oh, yes, it absolutely is.
I wish I could be there.
Football should be a part of every holiday.
I have no problem with that statement. So, Matt, we're going to skip right past. We just did spring football in 90 seconds. Not bad.
It's pretty good. A lot faster than they'll do it.
Yeah. We've got something important to do. We're doing a draft.
Oh, snap.
Movie draft. Snap. 2013 movies. We are going to go back and forth, draft three movies apiece, and maybe talk about a few other movies along the way. So how this works is Matt will draft. I cannot draft what he has already drafted, and so I will then draft. And we will do it snake style. Should we do it snake style?
Yeah.
Okay, so snake style.
Auction would be too complicated.
Auction would be too complicated. We are stealing this idea shamelessly from several other podcasts, including the Pawscast from Joe Posnanski. So this is not an original idea, nor are we claiming such. And this has been done in print by many, many writers in different forums. All right, so Matt, with your first pick in the 2013 movie draft, you select...
I select The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug.
Well, I thought you might go there. So I did not actually have that at the top of my list.
Really? I thought that was going to be... I thought for sure that would be in your list.
Well, I've got like 20 movies written down that I really want to see.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's a year of geek movies.
It is
dominated by geeky films.
There's going to be a lot of geeks in movie theaters in 2013. Higher than normal.
Lots of guys sitting by themselves, watching movies.
Yep. And we're going to be two of those guys.
And sitting there in the theater complaining about people making... stories about big, making jokes about Big Bang Theory and saying, you don't even understand half the jokes in Big Bang Theory, you jerks. That's been my new favorite thing about my geek friends when we talk is some people are like, everybody likes Big Bang Theory, they don't even get half the jokes. I'm like, oh my gosh, do we have to do this? Is this high school again? Anyway,
it's pretty awesome.
It's pretty awesome. All right, with my first selection.
I liked Big Bang Theory before it was big.
Yeah, sure you did.
And it was just Little Theory.
Little Bang Theory. Before the Big Bang came. So, Matt, with my first selection, the second pick in the 2013 movie draft, I take Iron Man 3.
Not a surprise.
So, if you've seen the trailer, the new trailer came out today, that we're recording this on Tuesday. Wow. It looks awesome. It looks awesome. I know Iron Man 2, for a lot of people, was a disappointment, and not nearly as good as the first one, though I liked Iron Man 2. I think Iron Man 3 has the chance to be the best of the three. I'm very excited about that. All right, so I get the next pick as well, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep, we are going snake.
I am going to stick with superhero films, big shocker.
Yeah, I'm really surprised about
and
this.
And go with The Wolverine.
Oh!
That movie, like the last Wolverine movie was pretty terrible. Did you see that one?
I was actually in a movie theater. I was traveling for work when I saw the Wolverine in the theater, and the fire alarm went off. During the movie, they evacuate everybody. Okay, they finally let us all back in, and there was only like 15 seconds left in the movie.
Oh my gosh, that's terrible. Because the ending was awful.
Yeah, it was a lot worse when you had to wait an hour in a hot parking lot for the last 15 seconds of the movie.
Oh, dude, that's terrible.
No, I did enjoy that movie, but it's not, I mean, it is what it is.
I liked that movie for the first 45 minutes, and then it kind of went off the rails for me. But The Wolverine looks really good. It's in Japan. They'll be, as a comic book geek, they're following some storylines that I'm very excited about. So, all right, Matt, you've got your second and final selection, both coming up here in a row, so hopefully you don't take my third selection, but I doubt it.
No, I know what your third selection is,
because
I thought it was going to be your second selection. So with my second selection, I'm going to take World War Z.
Oh, excellent choice.
This is a book adaptation, and I've not read this book, but I'm going to read this book.
You should.
I might be reading it right now if we weren't doing the podcast.
Maybe you are reading it right now.
Maybe I am. But I think this is going to be a cool movie. I'm looking forward to it.
Excellent.
It's a cool story. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's a very difficult book to adapt, and I think they did the right thing, which is make it more, it's not as story-ish of a book.
Right.
But it sounds like they did the right thing, which is if you tried to adapt it straight out, it would have been a very confusing, disjointed 1970s kind of movie. So hopefully they did a good job. And Brad Pitt, you know, our wives will go because it's Brad Pitt, even if it's zombies. All right, Matt, your third and final pick in the 2013 movie draft.
This one's tough. This one's really tough for me. And the movie I'm going to pick with my third pick is one that could be good or could just be really, really bad.
Okay.
And I'm not even really sure how to pronounce it.
Okay.
Elysium.
Elysium. I had that on my list, not as my next pick, but I had it. It was number four if you had taken The Wolverine.
This could be a really cool movie.
Did you see District 9?
No.
Because Blomkamp, the guy that's directing this, did District 9, which is, I've never seen, because it's rated R, but if I had seen it, it was extremely disturbing. Like, I watched it on the airplane, like, I rented it from iTunes and watched it on the airplane, and I was, like, creeped out the entire business trip.
That's pretty awesome.
But anyway, so why are you excited for Elysium?
The story, I like the story. I really like Matt Damon.
How do you like them apples?
How do you like them apples? The story is really compelling to me.
I got a number.
I think they're going to blow a bunch of stuff up.
Yes, I think. And it's a different role for Matt Damon.
No, it looks like, I mean, this is a little bit of a, I mean, it's not quite, it's not a Jason Bourne. It's certainly not Good Will Hunting.
No. Certainly not Good Will Hunting or We Bought a Zoo. It might be very close to We Bought a Zoo.
I don't know. I did not see We Bought a Zoo, but I don't see any possible parallel between the two.
Matt Damon's in it.
Okay.
It's your parallel. All right. So I'm going to shock the world with my third choice, Matt.
If it is not what I think it is, I will be shocked.
The third choice is Star Trek Into Darkness. Which did not shock you at all.
Not even a little
bit. I was going to say Star Wars Episode 7, even though it's not due out until 2015. But I thought that was a little premature. So I really like the first Star Trek movie. I am a Trekkie. I am a rare both Star Wars and Star Trek geek. That is a rare find. Rare kind of geek. But I do enjoy myself some Star Trek. And the first movie I thought was quite good. And the previews for this next movie look very good. And I'm very excited. There were some other movies that I had to leave off that were Man of Steel, but the last Superman movie was terrible, so I don't know.
I'm not really optimistic about
Man Ender's Game, one of my favorite books, but I don't know. I'm still for Pacific Rim looks good. Anytime you can have giant alien lizards fighting giant robots, I think that's a winning combination.
Yep.
And then the one that I did not put on my list is The Lone Ranger, which looks terrible.
See, that one, I don't know. That looks to me like Pirates of the Caribbean in the West.
With Johnny Depp as Tonto.
Yeah, I think he's wearing, in the pictures, I think he's wearing one of the same costumes from Pirates of the Caribbean. I think it is.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Yes, I think he might be. Well, Matt, this was a successful draft.
It was. I think it went really well. I'm excited about this year in movies.
Yes, as am I. There are like 20 movies I want to see. I will never see all of them in the theater because I have three children, a job, and this podcast, for heaven's sakes. Gotta be dedicated. So we didn't get to the tweet bag today because no one had tweet bagged us any questions because we kind of did this last minute.
But you can tweet at us at BYU_RiseShout. You can also email us, adam@loyalcougars.com or matt@loyalcougars.com. And, of course, download and listen often and tell your friends. And we're excited for the WCC tournament, and we'll check in next week after the tournament's done. So we'll catch you next time.
Go Cougars.